Okay, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Innovations in Education, eSchool News' podcast on the latest and greatest happenings in ed tech in the K-12 space this week. I'm Kevin Hogan, and I'm glad you found us. On this episode, we look at some of the more interesting articles posted to eSchool last week, many of the ideas in which go against what I would call the traditional grain of online teaching and learning. Have a listen for a few surprises. First, in her provocative essay entitled, What's So Great About Online Teaching? Dr. Anahi Veladri. She is a sociologist and medical anthropologist and professor at Queens College. She digs into some of the insights she has gleaned about educators' work during the pandemic. The piece is chock full of interesting nuggets, but here are a few highlights. She writes, had I been asked what I thought about online teaching 2 years ago, I would probably have given you quite an earful of the many known shortcomings of virtual teaching modalities, including the challenges to student engagement and community building. Ask me now, and my answer could not be more different. Amid the latest push for a return to in-person teaching, many instructors have been adamant about the advantages of digital classrooms and look forward to teaching continuously online in a post-pandemic world, and I am one of them. But some of her practices don't necessarily follow the popular route you may be reading and hearing about in the space. She goes on, it's important to be present as accountability. My virtual classrooms seek to reproduce the best of face-to-face interactions. Therefore, I don't tape my sessions nor give students recordings of my lectures. This encourages them to attend class regularly and engage with the reading materials. Although some students may request recordings in the belief that they will catch up with the materials later, in truth, they won't. I am also a firm proponent of the Socratic method of lecturing, which has been shown to encourage critical thinking through continuous questioning about the class materials. That's pretty interesting, because I say, you know, most of the practical advice that I've been seeing coming from the educator space is that the idea of recording and having digital libraries and the flipped classroom is something that should be front and center. So, a pretty provocative take here. One final insight, she writes, online instruction is not a panacea, nor should it ultimately replace in-person teaching. Certainly, the latter is essential for colleagues in the natural sciences who require labs, but in a post-pandemic world, the big question is perhaps not how to fully return to real-life lecture halls, but to how to best incorporate the best of virtual teaching technologies with a compassionate human touch. Pretty hard to argue that point. Next, Michael Horn, he's the co-founder and distinguished fellow at the Clayton Christensen Institute and is one of the EdTech's leading experts and advocates, pens a piece called Why Offline Digital Learning is Critical to Impact Children Worldwide. This title threw me off a bit, to be honest. It's up on the news feed at eSchool News. He writes, while we work to increase universal access to the internet, the EdTech ecosystem cannot ignore the hundreds of millions of children currently without connectivity, but who are eager to learn. Even if these children could get access to the internet, most would find it cost prohibitive to learn how to use it. That's because the cost of data wouldn't allow them to learn on these platforms, much less learn well. Similar to how individuals in upper income countries had internet access 15 years ago, but weren't using it to stream movies. As a result, these children need an offline digital solution that adapts to the learning needs of the child. He goes on to detail a number of ways that both schools and the EdTech marketplace can address this issue. Here's one example. He writes, some of these solutions may be locally based for-profit opportunities that take advantage of the ingenuity of entrepreneurs to create solutions tailor-made for the local circumstances. By way of analogy from outside education, these examples might look like Copia, which is a Kenyan e-commerce startup that helps rural populations buy basic goods. Also, the Metro African Express, a Nigerian ride-hailing company that uses motorcycles, not cars. That's a better fit for the African context than the car share-riding companies, for example. So what's his point? He ends up writing, all of these pathways hold immense promise, but they require the edtech sector to think not just about online learning solutions, but also about digital solutions.